Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
How much fun was to be talking about football again last night? I kind of predicted that the NFL draft would be the elixir that we needed to kind of break the stranglehold that some of the bad news has had over us over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I think last night the NFL draft very much did its job. I'm looking forward to continuing following that throughout the weekend. Obviously, there's great news and reasons for celebration today with Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson. We'll certainly get into that over the course of our program. We'll talk to Connor Riley more about both those guys here in a moment. A good bit on DeAndre Swift, him not being selected in the first round coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, let me have some fun with what is admittedly a pretty unserious topic. You know, the war of words in the SEC to me is always fascinating. It's always interesting. And there's quite a cold war going on right now between Georgia and Alabama related to Scott Cochran leaving Alabama as strength and conditioning coach, coming to Georgia as special teams coach. And Cochran did something on Twitter that a lot of coaches do, essentially use some of the work at a previous stop as a way of touting their current school for recruiting. Cochran's got a Who's Next NFL graphic on his Twitter, and it's got guys like Julio Jones very prominently featured on the photo. You got Josh Jacobs, Jonah Williams, Quinnen Williams, a lot of guys like that who he helped coach and develop from a strength and conditioning standpoint in Alabama, and Cochran's essentially touting his work with them and kind of using that as a way to promote Georgia. Now, as you might imagine, Alabama fans are none too happy about this. In fact, a lot of comments on this on Twitter. Let me see if I can find a few of these. You know, a few folks kind of talking to him about some torn ACLs that some of those guys dealt with. You know, a guy kind of talking about how if Alabama's had that much success, maybe those guys should have gone to Alabama. Someone sort of mocks him for being a special teams coach now. So a lot of Alabama fans are really mad about this. Now, here's my take on this. Things like this as a way of recruiting. You know, I think that Georgia's bigger than this. I don't necessarily think this is something that Georgia necessarily ought to be doing, certainly doesn't have to do. So in a weird way, I guess I kind of don't like this from Cochran, but the fact that Alabama fans are mad about it makes me love it. And it's the same thing I've been saying about Cochran all along. There was a lot that Georgia could have done with its coaching hire. There's a lot that Georgia could have done to kind of fully round out its coaching staff. But there was nothing more act of war-ish in the direction of Alabama than hiring Scott Cochran. So there, from that standpoint, I've had my popcorn out for this the entire time. I am greatly entertained by how, to use an overused phrase, how triggered Alabama fans have been by Cochran ever since that he left. And, you know, when Connor joins us in a moment, of course, you read Connor Riley at DogNation.com, the comparison that he's going to make is an obvious one, and it's one that I brought up here before, too, of when Tim Brewster, who's the, you know, carnival barking assistant coach at Florida, when he was at Texas A&M and kind of touting some guys that had been a part of the Florida State program, Jalen Ramsey, kind of shot back at that tweet saying, don't use me to promote Texas A&M because I didn't go there and I wasn't coached by you, Tim Brewster. This was a graphic in which Brewster was sort of bragging about all of the Jimbo Fisher guys and how much money they'd made at the NFL level. What makes the Cochran thing here different from that, though, is that Ramsey didn't like what Tim Brewster was doing. And for all I know, Ramsey doesn't like Tim Brewster. I don't know that one way or another. But in terms of Cochran using some Alabama names to kind of tout himself as a Georgia assistant coach, my prediction is you won't see Alabama players complaining at Cochran for doing this because deep down, the Alabama guys kind of like Scott Cochran. I'll give you an example of this. One of our good friends here on this show, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, is a former Alabama All-American. His name is Mike Johnson. Mike was in the early days of the Nick Saban program in Alabama and the early days for Cochran there as well. And when Mike joined our show after Cochran was shortly after Cochran was hired by Georgia, Mike took some time to explain just what Cochran means to so many Alabama players. Here's what Mike Johnson, the former Bama All-American, said then.
He's an authentic person. He's not going to, you know, BS with you. He's going to tell you how it is. He's going to tell you how he feels. He's going to tell you what you need to do to be great. And I think that's why so many guys connected with him. There was no facade. You know, you talked about the offseason. For all intents and purposes, he was the offseason head coach at Alabama. I mean, you don't see Nick Saban on a day-to-day basis when you're down in the weight room, when you're running sprints. It's Scott Cochran. When Nick Saban is off recruiting or when some of those coaches have off time during the summer, it's Scott Cochran. I mean, he is the head coach, and kind of the go-between, and I think his personality just allows him to kind of develop those relationships with players, that he's just an authentic person. I think that's why Kirby feels very comfortable in moving him to a role like special teams, because he can touch every position group on the team and continue to develop those relationships much in the same way he did as a strength coach.
Be very aware of this, that Nick Saban certainly knows how former Bama players feel about Cochran. I think that Mike Johnson, who joined our show on this, is representative of the larger group. You won't see former Alabama players complaining about seeing their name and their face being used to help Scott Cochran. They like Cochran. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to root for Georgia when Georgia plays Alabama, but they're certainly not going to be rooting against Cochran. So, you know, ultimately, something like this, does Georgia need to do that for recruiting? No, I think that Georgia has a program sells itself without having to borrow the reputation of Alabama players. But if Bama fans are this mad about it, then Georgia must be doing something right. And no doubt about it, the presence of Cochran and what he meant to Alabama for such a long time, now on the Georgia sideline, has certainly made this UGA-Alabama, if you want to call it a rivalry, you can, but it's made it a lot spicier, including the matchup that's about to go down coming up this September. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented today by Kroger, and we're glad to have you with us. And, of course, so many of you utilizing Kroger right now. Let's face it, we're all spending more time in supermarkets than we're used to spending, just because a lot of the rest of life hasn't been kind of shut down here. And when I'm going to Kroger, the one in my area anyway, I'm always blown away by just how well stocked the shelves are, how clean the store is. It's amazing the work that Kroger is doing to make all of our lives better during this time in which we've been kind of quarantined for longer than many of us want to be. And as a way of showing some thanks to Kroger, you can support a great organization that Kroger's supporting, because not only are they working hard to keep food on our tables right now, they're also working hard to help people who've kind of been greatly impacted by COVID-19. This is through the COVID-19 Response Fund with the Kroger Company's Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation. What Kroger's doing right now is requesting customer donations at checkout to help throughout the month of April with the emergency COVID-19 Response Fund. Here's how you can do this. You can simply round your purchase price up to the next dollar, or you can make a donation at dollar amount, $5, $10, you can help support the new emergency COVID-19 response fund from our friends at Kroger and their Zero Hunger, Zero Waste Foundation. Another example of how Kroger is really trying to make a huge impact in the community right now. We're good to be with you on the radio, 960 The Ref, of course, podcast form, the wherever you find them, Google, Facebook is video, Apple, Spotify. We're just glad to have you here on Dog Nation Daily here today. And one of the big stories last night was what did not happen, the fact that DeAndre Swift was not taken in the first round. We kind of predicted yesterday that there was a chance this would happen. Certainly some of the recent mock drafts had suggested that as a possibility. I also told you yesterday, in terms of the attitude, the focus, the intensity, DeAndre Swift seems to have a lot of that. If I was an NFL GM, I'd want Swift on my team for those reasons, even though it's ultimately impossible to predict who's going to succeed, who's not going to. There is something about the way that Swift carries himself that makes me want to trust him as a football player. With all that in mind, I'm not surprised that he was last night on Twitter kind of showing himself to have a little bit of an edge, a little bit of a chip on his shoulder about not being selected in the first round. And my bet is, my belief is, he'll probably use that as motivation. But beyond all of that, though, I think there's another takeaway that we need to examine when it comes to Swift not being selected in the first round and LSU's Clyde Edwards-Helaire going in that spot to the Kansas City Chiefs that many people thought that DeAndre Swift might land. And ultimately, there's nothing you can do about this now in the past, but I think you can look ahead towards the future and realize that when you bring in a sharp offensive mind, and at LSU, Joe Brady, his impact on Edwards-Helaire may be just as substantial as it was for Joe Burrow. We make a big deal about the fact that Burrow went from kind of an also-ran quarterback in 2018 to now being the number one overall pick in 2019, and justifiably so, Joe Brady gets a lot of credit for that. Brady now the offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. But really, not much less substantial is the impact that Brady had on Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who was a good but not thought of as spectacular running back in 2018. And after last night, he is also a first-round pick. Go look at the statistical growth in Edwards-Helaire from 18 to 19. It's very, very similar to what a lot of LSU players experience in an offense, even though Brady was thought to be the passing game coordinator, thought to be a passing guy. That explosive passing offense from LSU made things a lot easier and a lot better for Clyde Edwards-Helaire there as well. And so in the future for Georgia running backs, the next group of guys following the footsteps of DeAndre Swift, I think the hope that you have here is that the offense of Todd Monken does something similar for these running backs, even though Monken, justifiable in the basis of his recent track record, is kind of thought of as a passing guy. And for a Georgia offense in 2019, that because of how inept it was in certain aspects, maybe not getting the most out of DeAndre Swift, maybe in the future that doesn't have to be a problem. And really kind of calls back to mind something that Kirby Smart said when he was on an Atlanta radio station going back to last week about what the new offense is going to be like, what it's going to look like. And at the time, you know, Kirby Smart sort of addressed playmakers, and running backs were one of the positions that he kind of highlighted there in light of kind of what's all gone on here. Maybe a new reason to kind of reconsider what Kirby Smart said last week. Let me let you hear some of Kirby talking about those playmakers.
I think the biggest thing when you're looking for the difference is going to be who the playmakers are. You know, last year DeAndre Swift was a feature presentation. Cager early in the season was that. You know, who are those guys going to be? Because every offense, as you well know, is built around who the guys are we got to get the ball to.
Right.
So it was Amir. You know, we got some tight ends that we think are going to be good players. James Cook. We'll have some really good players there to hopefully get the ball to. George is another one. We got some wideouts that we've got to get involved in the offense to be successful as we want to be. So how different will it look? That's just going to be based on who those playmakers are. I just hope we get the opportunity to find that out.
But, of course, from 680 The Fan in Atlanta, at the beginning of that clip, you hear Smart say, hey, last year we kind of featured DeAndre Swift in the offense. You know, I hate to bring up a sore subject, but can anybody say the way in which Swift was featured a year ago really highlighted the best of what he brought to the table? At times, the Georgia offense became too predictable and Swift became too easy to stop because of that. There's no point in rehashing the past, but as you look ahead towards the future, some of those 2020 playmakers that Smart mentions, guys like James Cook, guys like Zamir White, if the Georgia offense is more effective from its passing standpoint, from a passing attack standpoint, all of a sudden it's easy to imagine that opportunities will be created for Georgia running backs the same way that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who became a first-round pick last night, thrived in LSU's offense this past season. It kind of brings to mind something that Todd Monken once said there as well. When he was kind of hired by Cleveland and they were trying to kind of examine, you know, what he was and what he was going to bring to that Browns offense. Now, admittedly, the Browns situation may not be the first line on the resume for Monken in terms of the overall success he enjoyed there while in Cleveland. And yet, interviewed by the media after just taking that job, I thought he laid out a pretty interesting viewpoint about his overall coaching philosophy. So keep this in mind. For a new offense led by Monken that we believe is probably going to try to energize the passing attack, there could still be a big opportunity for running backs. Smart mentioned Cook and White by name. We see how Edwards-Helaire thrived in an LSU offense this past season. So keep all of that in mind when Todd Monken describes his offensive philosophy, going back to what he said when he was first hired by the Cleveland Browns at the beginning of last year.
I think balance is multiple skill players touching the football. To me, it's not always just run pass. It's, do you have enough skill players where they can touch the football? Last year at Tampa, we had almost had six guys, if OJ doesn't get hurt, of 700 plus yards from line of scrimmage. Well, that to me, that's balance. You have a number of guys that can hurt you from a matchup standpoint. Is running the football important? Sure, because in order to win, you've got to be explosive and not turn the ball over. How do you become explosive space players and throwing it over their head or throwing intermediate pockets, and running the football adds to that.
So listen, I mean, I think if you're Georgia running back, even if the ground and pound style that Georgia's kind of become famous for is less a part of this offense, I think you see an opportunity to thrive. As Monken said, when you're throwing over top of defense, when you're throwing those short intermediate routes, when you're spacing things out, all of a sudden it's a chance for multiple playmakers to get involved. And as Smart rightly points out, at Georgia, when you're thinking about the most likely playmakers in this offense, running back names do come up. Smart mentions Cook and White by name. You could also throw in Kendall Milton on that, and probably Kenny McIntosh a bit there as well, as both guys running in wide open lanes on the basis of a defense now forced to be more spread out and maybe more worried about vertical attack than it has been before, but also in the passing game, the way that Edwards-Helaire did so much for LSU a season ago. So when you're looking at what happened last night, you saw a running back get the nod in the first round, I think largely because of how successful the offensive system that he played in college was. And in the future, I think that Georgia needs to keep that in mind. that an offensive system that also thrives in the passing game can create great opportunities for running backs. Maybe the next time there's a decision we made about a UGA running back in the first round, that guy gets the nod because of the system that he had a chance to thrive in and the system that he had a chance to put all his skills on display in. My name is Brandon Adams. This, as I said before, is Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll do more on this topic, some fun stuff on Scott Cochran and the tweet heard around the world, or at least around Tuscaloosa. We'll do all of that. We'll talk about the great success that Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson got a chance to experience last night, and a look ahead to Jake Fromm and the rest of the draft weekend for the Georgia Bulldogs. It's Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. It's great to have all of you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let me bring in our buddy Connor Riley. Great reporting last night at DogNation.com on the NFL draft. I know we joked about this, Connor, a bit on our Cover 4 broadcast going back Thursday afternoon. This is one of your sort of favorite days in the sports calendar no matter what, and the fact that it's the only date currently on the sports calendar probably made it even more enjoyable last night, right?
Yeah, the joke that I used yesterday was, you know, I'm usually like a kid on Christmas when the NFL draft rolls around, but this is like having two really wealthy parents get divorced and then they get remarried, so you get two Christmases. It was sort of a double just because of the whole lack of sports and also it being one of my favorite events throughout the year.
So let me start with the first Georgia player who was taken. I think the story here is kind of interesting because there was not a lot of tipped hands about Andrew Thomas going number four overall to the Giants. If anything, there was a lot of media talk of other tackles being rated ahead of him. And yet, I think you and I would both say that Thomas is about as bulletproof of a pick as seemingly you can have. He's seemingly a really good dude off the field. He's obviously been a very good player for Georgia for 3 years on the field. What do you make of the fact that he kind of quietly worked his way into the top four, becoming the highest ever offensive lineman drafted in the history of the Georgia program? He's got robber baron wealth now for his family for generations to come. How does all this go about, you think?
Yep. No, I'm just recalling back to our Cover 4 yesterday. Thomas was always the safest, lowest, or highest floor prospect among the tackles. And I actually think that ended up making him sort of most appealing to the New York Giants there at number four. Dave Gettleman, I think, pretty clearly likes what he sees from Georgia football players. Second year in a row, they take a Georgia football player in the first round. They took DeAndre Baker in the first round last year. Lorenzo Carter was also a relatively high draft pick there for the Giants back in 2018. You know, Thomas, again, I think the biggest thing with him, you know, he, unlike guys like Tristan Wirfs and Jedrick Wills, those guys had really only played right tackle. Thomas has the versatility of showing on his college tape that he could play both right tackle and left tackle at an extremely high level. And I think ultimately that, along with all everything else he brings, you know, the off-field intangibles, the character, leadership values, I think that just made him one of the safer picks of the night. And when you're drafting a position like offensive tackle, it's really not a place you want to bust. That's a place where, you know, you'd be okay with just a good solid player there, and I think that's exactly what Thomas is going to be at the next level.
Fun to see Wilson get into the first round there as well. There had been a lot of chatter about that in recent days. In fact, one of the teams that was pegged to draft him was the team that did select him, the Tennessee Titans. And just kind of given the way that Wilson's career path has kind of traveled to Georgia, I've spoken about this before, I've always kind of found Wilson to be among the more interesting players on the Georgia roster. And once again, you've really done it right if you get a chance to be one of the first 32 players selected. What a great moment from him last night, and really unbridled emotion. You know, the tears were flowing. It was a cool thing to be able to see last night.
Yeah, there were some people, Mel Kiper Jr. chief among them, who said Wilson should have gone back for another year at Georgia, and then he doubled down in that position last night when Wilson was taken in the first round. I thought that was pretty puzzling and, quite frankly, a little unprofessional there. Just sort of raining on Wilson's parade there for a bit. But yeah, great moment for Wilson, a guy who I think really, you know, bet on himself in this draft process, was confident in what he had put on tape. He told us at the combine that he had been matching up against guys who were going to be first round picks, guys who were older than him, and he was holding his own. And that's sort of when he knew that he'd be ready for this next level. And he, you know, the reality is, and this is the reason he was a five-star recruit, there just are not that many players with his size and athleticism combination, and he's still, you know, fairly raw in the game of football. He's not as polished as Thomas, But you give him time, especially on a good team like the Titans, where, you know, right now he's not going to be asked to play left tackle. He's going to ask to be slotted in at that right tackle spot for the Titans. He's a mauler. He fits, I think, perfectly with what Tennessee wants to do on offense. You know, they're a power rushing team with Derrick Henry. And over the course of the game, they'll want to wear you down. Well, Isaiah Wilson, over the course of the game is going to wear you down as a right tackle. And I think that's really a perfect fit for player and team.
It was also really funny to see, you know, there was a lot of this last night on draft night, Wilson in particular, where it seemed like, you know, maybe somebody was trying to work their way into the camera frame there a little bit, and somebody in the situation tried to, you know, move that person out of there. There was a lot of managing the camera scene last night, virtual draft, you know, who gets to be on the camera shot, who gets to have that moment next to the player as he's drafted. There were a lot of mamas who seemed to have some opinions about that last night, Isaiah Wilson included, I guess.
Yeah, Wilson's girlfriend wanted, I guess, a little extra screen time, and I guess Mrs. Wilson showed off where her son gets that elite push-pull ability, you know, just yanking her right out of the way there. You know, if NFL teams had seen that, I think before he had been drafted, maybe Wilson goes a little bit higher in the first round last night.
Yeah, you may be right about that. So I want to ask you this as a way of leading into something that I have talked to our podcast audience more about today, and we're going to have some fun with on video as well. So when it comes to Wilson and Thomas, do you foresee a tug of war here in terms of who gets credit for this? Sam Pittman, who coached them, Georgia, the program that housed them. Do you foresee any cold war between what Pittman's going to try to say about this and what Georgia's going to try to say about this, about who ultimately gets the credit for the development that these two guys underwent while they were at UGA?
No, because I think in this circumstance, it is fair to say both these guys get credit and both deserve, I think, credit. Sam Pittman obviously did a fantastic job at Georgia developing offensive linemen, recruiting them, building them up, bringing them in, and sort of making Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson what they are. But Kirby Smart deserves the same, I think, amount of credit there. And I don't have a problem with if Pittman wants to hang pictures of Thomas and Wilson on his wall like he did sort of with Frank Ragnow when he was with Arkansas. I don't have an issue with that. It's not quite the Tim Brewster, Scott Cochran.
Jalen Ramsey.
Hey, these are guys who I coached at another school. Let me see if I can shoehorn my new school into this. I think this is a totally different situation. And if Pittman absolutely deserves some credit here for what he did with Thomas and Wilson and all the Georgia offensive linemen.
So speaking of Cochran, Cochran's got the tweet out there. We're showing a lot of players that played at Alabama. And the Twitter edit, the way it's directed towards recruits, is essentially a way of Cochran kind of giving Georgia seemingly some credit for some players that played at Alabama. The honest truth is, I don't necessarily like stuff like this, but the fact that it makes Alabama fans so mad makes me love it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
As an act of trolling, it's an A+. It's a 12 on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, would I advise a Georgia coach to typically do something like that? Probably not. But if Alabama fans are this mad about it, then something must be going well here.
This feels like Tim Brewster material, and Georgia doesn't need a Tim Brewster. You know, Scott Cochran's reputation is well known and well established as one of the best developers of talent and developers of people in the country. He doesn't need some fancy graphic of guys who didn't play at Georgia or who never did anything to Georgia except beat them on the football field to sort of, you know, help sell himself to possible recruits. So I wasn't exactly thrilled to see that out there. And whatever flack comes from this, I think is actually pretty deserved.
So let me defend it for a second. And I don't 100% disagree with you, but I want to play the other side of this for a moment. And I think there's actually an interesting tie-in to Sam Pittman on this. You mentioned Tim Brewster, who sort of famously put a big graphic together that featured Jalen Ramsey. Ramsey kind of shot back on that, feeling like he didn't want to have his name connected to Texas A&M. The reason why Scott Cochran in this case is not Tim Brewster, what he did as a part of the Aggies program, is there's not, and my prediction on this anyway is, there's not a single Alabama player featured on that graphic who will kind of fire back at Scott Cochran for using their name because they like Cochran. We've had former Alabama players on our show who've talked about how much they like Cochran. In the sort of battle of Nick Saban versus Scott Cochran, there are more former Alabama players kind of siding on the Cochran part of this than siding on the Saban part of this, so therefore that won't happen. It's the same thing if Sam Pittman tried to take credit for Thomas and Wilson. The truth is, Thomas and Wilson would not complain if their picture showed up on an Arkansas graphic because they also like Pittman. So from the Cochran stance here, what makes it different than some of the carnival barking we've seen from Tim Brewster is the players whose likenesses is being used by Cochran, seemingly my prediction is they're more than okay with that because they like Cochran.
That's certainly a fair point. I still just think, and you know, they probably when they put it together thought it was pretty innocuous, but that's not something I think the Georgia football program sort of needs to use to sell itself to recruits. They've had a pretty strong reputation of developing players on their own. So I get why Cochran would want maybe that out there, but I just don't necessarily know if this was the best time for it.
Let me get into the DeAndre Swift stuff, because obviously that was a huge topic last night. Swift does not go in the first round. That was not necessarily unforetold. We had sort of seen some mock drafts that had him out of the first round as we got later into the process here. And Connor, what I spent a lot of time on our podcast talking about on Thursday is that pretty much every draft pick, potential draft pick, all says the same stuff. They all talk about how hard they work. They all talk about how motivated they are. In Swift's case, when you're not drafting the first round, they all talk about how intense they are about vanquishing those that said they weren't good enough. And yet, when DeAndre Swift's case, he's just always had this veneer of believability. When he says that he's going to remember the people who passed over him, in Swift's case, it just seems like he probably will do that. He just comes across as very believable. I like that edge to him. I'm not surprised that he responded with a little bit of an edge last night as not being one of the first 32 selected. I thought it was cool to see Malik Herring and Jamar Salyer and Mecole Hardman and others who've kind of stepped up and supported him. You know, honestly, none of this is a perfect science. Who knows who the best running back's going to truly be? But what did you make of Clyde Edwards-Helaire going to the Chiefs instead of DeAndre Swift?
It made sense to me. I think Edwards-Helaire fits what Andy Reid really wants in a running back in his offense, where, you know, I think Swift, as good as he is as a pass catcher, he's as equally capable as a running back and what he's able to give you between the tackles. Whereas I think Edwards-Helaire is a better pure pass catcher than Swift, and I think that's just what the Chiefs want in value in a running back. And again, I think just about every NFL draft expert would agree with you. If they were just drafting the 32 best players, DeAndre Swift would have had his name called last night. But, you know, with the reality is of running back these days and the production you're able to get from guys taken lower and later on in the draft, there's not that much of a need to take a guy like Swift in that first round, to pay him a little bit more money, to have that extra year of control with him. But I made this point in my story this morning. The number one and number two leading rushers in the NFL last year were both second-round picks. Yeah. That was Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb. So I expect Swift to be one of, I think, the first 15 names off the board tonight. I certainly think he could be drafted by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at pick number 45, and that'd be a great spot for him. Miami picks once again at pick number 39. It looked like he was going to go in the first round of Miami last night, and then the Packers inexplicably traded up to draft Jordan Love for reasons that are unbeknownst to me, given they have Aaron Rodgers there. But you know, I think Swift is going to be a very, very good player very, very early on in his time in the NFL. I expect him to be probably a better player over the course of his career than Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I think for what Edwards-Helaire is able to bring to the Chiefs, I certainly understand the reasoning of them going him there at the end of the first round.
One of the things that you and I have gone round and round on in the past is the impact that Joe Brady had on the LSU offense. I just think it's a fascinating sports story because it's very hard to find an example of like an A-B test like this. Almost all the same players in 2018, almost all the same players in 2019, and yet the results were so different. A lot of times we focus in on how much better Joe Burrow got from one year to the other. But the truth is, the impact on the stats for Clyde Edwards-Helaire in a Joe Brady offense was almost just as significant, even though Brady was just the passing game coordinator. He goes from about 1,000 yards one year, second leading rusher, to being 1,400 yards, I believe, this most recent year. Huge, eye-popping type stats. And Connor, I guess it's a reminder to me of, if you've got the right offensive coordinator in place, how much, even an enhanced passing game, how much running backs can kind of benefit from that. I think that's the untold story in all of this. I don't think there's any way, I mean, as amazing as it is that Joe Burrow went from where he was projected after the 2018 season to the number one overall pick, the fact that Helaire went from being a backup running back at LSU to a first-round pick, that to me is almost just as substantial a leap. And I think it shows you what coaching can do to benefit a running back. And frankly, you know, honesty compels me to admit, it also kind of shows you how a talent like Swift can be maybe underrated if he didn't have the right kind of offense built around him.
Right. I think it's certainly fair to wonder, you know, if Swift got to play in an LSU type offense, Or even, you know, I think back to a guy he's compared himself to, a Christian McCaffrey-type offense at Stanford and his sort of last years in college. It wouldn't have surprised me to see him go in the top 15, top 20 of the draft, but because he just did not have that luxury this past year at the University of Georgia, that I do think certainly plays an impact on his stock and where he ended up getting drafted. It's interesting about Edwards-Helaire. You know, you mentioned him, and obviously he had a better statistical year under Brady and that entire offense, but when he played against Georgia, he actually had a much better day in 2018 against the Bulldogs than he did in 2019, over 145 yards in that 2018 game, whereas I believe he had less than 60 in the SEC championship this past year. So he had always been, at least when I had seen him, an impressive football player. But I think to your larger point, you know, when you have an entire offense opened up, it just makes things so much, and you're not necessarily putting it all on one guy like I think Georgia was doing with Swift this past year. I think it just makes everything so easy for a player like Edwards-Helaire, a player like Justin Jefferson, to sort of shine when the opposing defense really can't key in on you. And I think that's a big reason you saw those guys go where they did last night.
You've said you expect DeAndre Swift to be an early pick in the second round. I would agree with you. The other interesting name here, whether it be, you know, second round or whatever, is Jake Fromm. I told Mike Griffith on the show yesterday that I really, even though I love the hot takes and the opinions, I really don't have a very well-formed opinion on where I think Jake Fromm is going to go, just because the projections I've heard have been so all over the place. Do you have any sense, or in the research that you've done, have you seen a consensus form that maybe I haven't noticed?
I do think Jake's going to have to wait a while to hear his name called tonight. I think he's going to be at best a third round selection. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. There have been some good players who come out of the third round and make, you know, and have lasting NFL careers. I think the Indianapolis Colts at pick number 75, I think, is a really interesting spot for him. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at pick number 76 could be an interesting spot for him, given just sort of the climates those two teams play in. They're both offensive-minded coaches. They're a place where he can go in, not be expected to start right away, but can sort of learn as a backup, be a quality backup to guys who are a little bit older. And then when those guys move on, they will have a guy who is ready to sort of step in and handle things right away. It would not. So this is, if I could give my best Mike Griffith hot take, bold prediction here, if I were going to place bets on where guys were going, if I could do a little parlay and put money on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers drafting both DeAndre Swift and Jake Fromm tonight, I'd put a little interesting nugget there, because I think there might be some decent odds on that happening.
That's very interesting. And obviously, Georgia fans would love the idea of those two guys teaming back up again. I guess let me ask you this, because one of the comps that I've seen for Fromm as of late is kind of a weird one. The name Chase Daniels come up a couple of times, of course, a former Missouri quarterback. A guy that's been a long time back in the NFL and has made a ton of money for doing so. And it's a weird thing, Connor, because I'm not quite so sure how Georgia fans would process that, how I personally would process that. If you make as much money as Daniel has made, hard not to call yourself a football success story, and yet Daniel has played very little and may, you know, never play. What would you think of Fromm if he goes on to be kind of a well-paid career backup, the way that Chase Daniel is going to parlay that with his NFL career?
It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I actually looked this up yesterday. Chase Daniels made $35 million
as a
backup quarterback. He's a guy who, you know, is a smart, capable guy. Maybe not a guy you turn to for 6, 7, 8, 9 starts a year. But if, you know, a quarterback goes down and you need a guy who can fill in for you for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, he's certainly a guy that can do that. He's had plenty of suitors. He's played for a lot of great teams and a lot of great offensive-minded coaches. And I think if Fromm goes in sort of a situation where he's asked to do the same and maybe he never puts it together as an NFL-level starter, I certainly think that is something Fromm is capable of doing. And I'd be more surprised if he ends up washing out of the league than he followed sort of that Chase Daniels career path.
Real quick final thing here. Beyond that, I know you watched the draft closely going into the weekend. What are the other UGA-related stories that are kind of interesting to you, whether it be Rodrigo getting selected, a lot of kickers don't, or, you know, other guys kind of sneaking into the draft here at some point in time? What's the rest of the weekend look like from a UGA perspective?
Yeah, on Saturday, I think there are a lot of fringe guys who might go undrafted, might get drafted. They, you know, some of them might prefer to go undrafted because there you actually get a little bit better of a choice of where you get to go in your situation. And that might give you a better shot of making the roster as opposed to just being a generic seventh round pick. I expect JRE to have his name called in the fifth or sixth round. I would expect Solomon Kinley to hear his name in that same sort of round. Rodrigo, end of the sixth round, early seventh round. I do think he's going to get drafted as a kicker. I think he's made too many big kicks in the, over the course of his career, as well as what he's able to bring as a kickoff guy and also as a marketing sort of ploy. I do think an owner could potentially find that pretty interesting, just given his popularity with Georgia, and he'd certainly be one of the more popular players in his new spot. And then you've got guys like Tyler Clark, Brian Harry, and Lawrence Cager, Charlie Warner, Eli Wolf, guys who I believe if they go to the right team in the right situation, they could stick around in the NFL and sort of help a team out in a variety of roles. It's just going to be, can they ultimately find or get put in that right spot for them that will best maximize their skill sets?
Connor, great stuff. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you over the weekend. Of course, talk to you back on our program again very soon as well.
Yep, always great to be on with you, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Good stuff there from Connor Riley. Always enjoy his draft insight. He loves that event. I think we all do this year, but Connor has always loved the NFL draft, so it's fun to get a chance to talk about something with him that is very, very near and dear to his sporting heart. As we transition our SEC through, I'll also remind you about a cool thing going on with my friends at Kroger right now. If you're looking for meal inspiration, let's face it, a lot of us are. You get tired of the same old every night. Well, Kroger's got you covered on that. Not only are the shelves stocked right now with all the things that you need for delicious, healthy food for your family, but with videos and step-by-step instructions, they can even give you some ideas for some delicious dinners and some fantastic feasts for your family. Here's the website to go to. It's Kroger.com/recipes. Very easy to remember. Kroger.com/recipes. You can kind of get in on that. So a couple stats from the NFL draft from last night. I'll read this from Peter Burns on Twitter, who says the SEC dominated the NFL draft with a record-setting 15 picks in the first round from six different schools. This in a response to some of the critics who said, for the SEC folks who brag about their draft success, don't forget how much of this kind of came from Alabama and LSU, and obviously both those programs were loaded this year, as per usual. But Burns is kind of right to point out how much more the wealth was really spread around. He says Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, Auburn all contributed to this. I'll also point out that Auburn had a couple first-round picks. Georgia had multiple there as well. So, you know, from that standpoint, the Big Ten, which only had three first-round picks, Big 12 only had, I guess they had four maybe. Pac-12 had the three, ACC had two. So from that standpoint, the SEC obviously looking far more loaded than a lot of these programs that are out there, these conferences that are out there. Individually, really good night for Ohio State. Good night, you know, for Clemson as per usual. But in terms of the conference domination, I think it's as sort of widespread as it's ever been. Now, the other number that kind of became interesting from last night was, once again, these recruiters that do this for a living, rating the players. Listen, once again, they kind of get that right in terms of the overall percentage of, you know, four- and five-star guys that end up kind of going to the league here. You know, about, what, three-quarters of everyone drafted last night was a former four- or five-star guy coming out of high school. Overwhelming majority of these guys were those sort of four- and five-star players. Just another example that, for the most part, actually, it's two-thirds. Two-thirds of players drafted last night were either four- or five-stars coming out of high school. When you think about, you know, how amazing it is that you start off with just sort of a population of high school players, and the recruiting guys kind of group the five-stars together, group the four-stars together. Of course, the five-stars are supposed to be potential first-round picks. The four-stars are guys that can play in the NFL. The recruiting industry, to its credit, gets this stuff right more often than not. You really don't hear a lot of naysayers on that anymore. It used to be there were a lot of, you know, recruiting's overrated, the stars are overrated. Pretty much the only people who are saying that now are coaches who can't get four- and five-star players. It's validated by the draft every single year that a future NFL guy, for the most part, sort of looks the part as a 16- and 17-year-old. Now, not everybody blossoms the way they're supposed to, but in terms of populations, grouping guys into the right category they're supposed to be in, recruiting industry does that pretty well. And, oh, yeah, by the way, the programs that collect the most of those four- and five-star players are going to do most of the winning. As far as what we saw from some SEC guys in the draft last night, Auburn's an interesting story to me. As I said before, they're one of the programs that had multiple first-round picks, but that's not really been the status quo for Auburn. You have to go back to 2014 to find the last time Auburn had a first-round pick. So in the entirety of the Gus Malzahn era, which would have started with the 2014 draft and continued last nine, he's only had three first-round picks, even though they've signed a huge number of four-star players. And as I mentioned on Twitter last night, they've actually beaten Alabama three times head-to-head in that span. Somehow, they've had fewer first-round picks than you think they kind of would have had. Obviously, Javon Kinlaw was a huge story last night. Hard to imagine how South Carolina only won the four games, one of them unfortunately being Georgia, just given the fact that Kinlaw was such an attractive player in last night's first round, and really such a dominant player when he played against UGA. And of course, Tua Tagovailoa, a major part of last night's story. As I predicted, the smokescreen of maybe he would fall in the draft. Ultimately, that ended up not being true. There's just too much talent here. I think he's going to recover from the injury. As I've said before, I don't think he's a program-changing player, but I think he'll eventually be healthy. And when healthy, he's probably a starter. Miami gets a chance to kind of hide behind that injury for right now, let him develop, keep some heat off the program while they potentially lose enough games to also acquire some draft capital again for next year as well. And now we'll turn our attention to the rest of the NFL draft over the weekend. DeAndre Swift, probably good news for him coming near the beginning of the second round. Curiosity abounds what happens to Jake Fromm and then some of the other Georgia names after that, also looking for their NFL homes. It's going to be a fun story to follow this weekend. Obviously, the first round gets a lot of attention, but the draft's going to dominate the weekend, and then we need a big sports story like this right now. We are going to get that. And you can't say enough again. I mean, Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson, first round picks last night, bookend Georgia tackles going into the first round in the same year with each other, a really fun and cool story. We talked about a lot on video this morning as well as part of our R.S. Andrews cool down. You know, air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric, R.S. Andrews does all of that for us. They can do all of that for you as well. Find them online at rsandrews.com. Something else you can find online, good news about Georgia and Florida, 1,273 days. That's how long since those lousy stinking Gators have beaten the Bulldogs. Their Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you Monday. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.